All right, back again. Steve Elsinger here, coaching basics number two. We're trying to figure out how we can be non-directive and directive at the same time. I'm calling it semi-directive. And we've looked at, you know, ways that you can do that by asking questions, by doing case studies, by letting a client tell their own stories. You know, all of this is about how to get the client more motivated. The truth is, the information of what it takes to succeed at most things in life, whatever it might be, parenting, marriage, business, sports, the information is out there. I mean, if people were incredibly motivated, they could go out and figure all this out. But people don't. And the reason that they don't is because they're not motivated enough. They're wallowing in the chaos of their life. They're wallowing in the chaos of their lack of parenting skills, or, you know, doing the right things in their marriage, or, you know, they can't figure out what to do for a career, and you know, they don't know which direction to go, and so instead of making decisions to try to figure that out, they just, you know, most people just sit there. And so they need help to sort of do what they could do. But most of it comes down to motivation. People just aren't that motivated. And so as a coach, you're trying to motivate them and to tap into a person's own desires and try to help them, you know, get rid of some of the walls and the things that are clouding their vision. You know, once someone has a clear vision of what they're supposed to do or what they could do and where that could lead in their life, then people become more motivated. Okay, so here we go. Slideshow from the beginning. All right. Making the directive more non-directive by using trial and error. Trial and error. We looked at this, you know, by asking questions, by telling stories, by using case studies. Now we're looking at one way you can get people more involved in their own solutions is trial and error. Most things we learn in life are by trial and error. If you think about it, walking. I mean, when you were one, it's not like someone said, your mother came up to you and said, okay, now what I want you to do is I want you to pay attention to how I walk. See how I walk? Yeah, you got these 2 feet, and, you know, I'm not crawling, I'm not using my knees or my hands, I'm just walking on my feet, and it's heel toe, one foot in front of the other. All right, now give it a try. And your one-year-old looks at you like, what? No. It was little by little. You were on your knees for quite a while, which is, you know, better than your belly, but you're on your, you know, and eventually somehow you get on your, you know, you're holding a couch or you're holding something, you're standing up on your feet, but you're holding on. Eventually you let go and you go. Talking. Is it not like, you know, we put two-year-olds in a speech class? You know, this is how you learn English. No. It's just all around you. And then, you know, babies make little sounds, and then, you know, the parents and everyone around them give sort of positive encouragement when you're on the right track. Oh, my child said dada, you know. And it was probably just gas, but, you know, it was encouraging. And then eventually, little by little, the kid figures out that when I say dada, really good things happen. And then that's how you learn. You know, your face, your lips, your tongue, all these things have to be in the right shape to create sound. It takes a long time to figure out thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of utterances to try to figure out how sounds go together, what a consonant and a vowel is. But it's all trial and error. You know, like, okay, how do you make the p sound? You know, well, you put your lips together, you know. As adults, we'd have to think about it. The TH sound, the. You know, some cultures don't have certain sounds, and it's extremely hard for a person in a culture that never used that sound to figure it out, when infants can figure out that sound in the proper culture. So these things we learn by trial and error, relationships. You know, what works in a relationship, what doesn't work in a relationship? You're going to school, learning to get along, learning to fit in with a group, to be part of something. These things take trial and error. If you do it this way, it works well. If you don't do it this way, then it doesn't work well. So people that are isolated from other people, it's really hard to learn anything, because we learn from as much from our mistakes as we learn from our successes. And so we need an environment that allows us to try and try again, and then learn and then adapt and then try. Most of who we are is because of trial and error. But how do you coach, teach through trial and error? So again, we're trying to make directive coaching a little more non-directive, or what we're calling semi-directive. Okay. Guitar, for example. I could just hand someone a guitar and say, good luck, here, just start putting your fingers on these frets, on these strings, in any manner that you would like, and then strum a chord and see what it sounds like. And people could do that all day long and never hit, something that sounds good. And then they'll stop with the guitar, believe me. So we have to show them enough, right? I have to show you what a chord is. Okay, this is how you do it, and then you play. This is how you hold this one, and then you play. And this is how you hold this one, and then you play. Now, the problem is when people do that, their fingers aren't used to this, one finger is touching another string, and it just sounds horrible. Okay, it just sounds horrible. So I challenge people, look, you have to practice 20 minutes every day. For 21 days in a row. If you do that 21 days in a row, through sheer trial and error, your fingers will figure out the proper place to be. And your hand, because everyone's hand is slightly different. This chord, you'll be more like this. And this chord, you'll be more like this. And I don't know what it's going to be, but I guarantee you in 21 days, your hand will do it. In the beginning, you have to do it in faith, because it doesn't sound good. You just have to follow what I'm telling, do exactly what I'm saying. Do it for 21 days in a row. And the first 5, 6, 7, 8 days, your fingers are going to hurt. It's going to sound horrible. But you just keep doing what I say. It's directive. I'm telling you what to do. You're going to succeed if you do this. And you have to do it in faith. And the first 6, 7, 8, 9 days, it's going to sound horrible. But eventually, this is going to click in your mind. This is going to click. All of a sudden, your hand is going to make one little shift, and it's going to make all the difference. And in 21 days, you'll have it figured out. Sailing, I use that example too. I'll teach you the basics, but I'm going to let you, through trial and error, doing the tiller. If you pull this direction, the boat goes the other direction. But how's that? But when you start looking at the water and what's going on, I guess that makes sense. And eventually, it will feel as natural as can be. It won't feel like you're doing the opposite thing. It'll feel like this is the right thing to do. But it will take some trial and error. You'll get it wrong for a while. Marriage, parenting, it's the same thing. I can teach you something, and now you go out and try it, but you're not going to get it quite right. But over time, you're going to learn, because good things will happen when you do it right. Bad things will happen when you do it poorly. That's the nature of trial and error. It's a stick and a carrot. You do it wrong, you get hit with a stick. You do it right, someone gives you a carrot. Of course, that's talking about horses, right? You hit the horse or you give him a carrot. We're all like horses. How do we teach concepts through trial and error? Example, parenting, teaching the skill of responsibility. Well, ask the client to try anything that comes to mind that might lead to the client's child becoming more responsible. So you teach what responsibility is. Responsibility is when your child says, I will take responsibility for the decision or for making this thing happen, and I am willing to live with the consequences of whatever happens. If I do a poor job and something bad happens and I suffer, I'm willing to take that consequence. Or if something good happens, I expect to be rewarded because of what I did. So, you know, you ask your client, okay, what responsibility thing can you give your child? And see if it works. For example, you could give your child the responsibility for getting up on time to go to school. Maybe your child doesn't get up on time. And so you got to keep pushing, shoving, yelling, screaming, you know, pushing them out the door because they got to go to school. So you say, no, you know, why am I taking responsibility? You know, my kid's 12 years old. He can get up on his own. Here's your alarm clock. Get up. Okay, but the child has to take on responsibility. And what if the child doesn't get up? Then what's going to happen? Well, the client says, well, I guess he has to walk to school. I guess he does. Now, if you drive him to school, what's he going to learn? I can get up on time or I could not get up on time, and it doesn't affect me in any shape. It doesn't affect me negatively. So, you know, the client has to figure out some thing to try. Now, did it work? I don't know. Did your child learn anything or didn't the child learn anything? Who knows? I don't know. It's trial and error. What's going to work? What's not going to work? So, next session, ask the client what happened. Did your kid get up and when the alarm get off? Yeah. Well, actually, my child didn't get up. The alarm went off and he didn't get up. Okay, so then what happened? Did you make him walk to school? Well, no, his mother wouldn't let him walk to school because, you know, it's dangerous. Who knows what's going to happen? So I ended up driving him. Oh, okay. So what did you teach your child about responsibility? Well, I guess I taught him that he doesn't have to be responsible because his parents will save him out of whatever bad decision that he makes. Yeah. And I realize walking to school might be dangerous, but if your child doesn't learn responsibility, guess what really dangerous things he's going to be doing when he's 19 or 20 years old? And you're not there to rescue him. You could make him walk to school and you could follow in your car as he walks along to make sure that nothing bad happens. You can do something about the situation right now. But when he's 19, 20, 21, 25, he's moved out of the house, he lives in another place, there's nothing you can do to protect your child from his own irresponsibility. Number two. If there was success, talk about why that may have been the case. The child, you know, the first day, I made him walk to school. Second day, he woke up when his alarm went off and he got ready. Why do you think that is? I think it's because he had to walk the day before. Huh. Number three, pursue a course of action based on what was learned. Okay, so how do we now use what we have learned about this whole responsibility thing with your child for everything? You know, doing his homework, sports, how he interacts, what he does at supper time, how he dresses. I mean, how do you give your child more responsibility and let your child suffer the consequences of his or her own decisions? See, if you don't do that as a parent, then your child, when they don't want to do something, they just blame you as the parent. Oh, it's my parents. And there are adults still blaming their parents. Why? Because they never learned how to take responsibility for their own life. Number four, if there was no success, talk about why that may have been the case. You know, that's a lot of times because we, as parents, don't let our kids experience the consequences of their decisions. We don't let kids experience the consequences of whether the child takes responsibility or doesn't take responsibility. Number five, help client figure out what to try next. Okay? So you tried this. This is what you learned. This is what you didn't do. This is what you're going to try to do in the future. Okay, what else? What do you want to do next? Is there another area of life that you want your child to learn responsibility, or should we move on to a new topic like judgment or discipline or whatever it might be? So there's all these topics related to a bigger topic like parenting. Judgment, responsibility, the I am somebody attitude, the I will try attitude, all these different things that are in this class on parenting. So we explore one, we look at what we want to do, we make plans, we plan of action, and then, okay, are you satisfied with that one, or do you want to move on to the next one, or do you want to work more on this responsibility thing? So again, you're doing a lot of directing, but you're also doing a lot of non-directing. You're leaving it up to the client. And again, we're doing that because that's where the motivation comes. The advantage of using trial and error. Number one, the client is much more likely to learn something by the failures as much as the successes. So it doesn't even matter if the client succeeds or fails. Because either way, it's a learning opportunity. In fact, often the failure is something that the client learns more from than the success. So, it's perfect for a coach because the coach wins either way. We make progress either way. Number two, it's often easier to talk about and understand concepts after there has been some struggle. A lot of times people don't learn because they look at things and they go, well, that seems easy, until they try it. And when they try it, they realize that this thing is way more involved than they originally thought. That's true in sports. It's true in almost everything. So allowing somebody to struggle a little bit at first. And by the way, if people struggle with something for a while, then they're way more open to a little bit of teaching, right? They're way more willing to work with the coach towards some goal than maybe before, because now they're frustrated. Frustration, pain, is sometimes very useful. There's a proverb that says, sometimes it takes a painful situation to make us change our ways. And that's often the case. Number three, the means you as the coach are employing will not only serve your current purpose, that is to teach something, but it will also become a skill that will help your client with learning anything. So if you can successfully use this trial and error thing to try to do this semi-directive coaching, in the process, you're going to help your client realize that a lot of things can happen through trial and error. And in fact, it's one of the major ways we learn anything, but there's one big obstacle, failure. Trial and error. There's a lot of error involved in trial and error. But that can be a positive thing. The advantage of using trial and error, James 1:2, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And that is one of my favorite passages. Testing, trial, these things produces something. It really produces faith. Faith. That eventually you'll get there. Faith is believing something that you don't quite have, that you don't quite see. That's what our faith, our Christian faith, is all about. We're trusting into something. I'm entrusting in heaven. I haven't been there. I accept it by faith. I accept that God is going to guide me by faith. I have to step out in faith. And the more times I do it, the more secure I am in that faith. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So this is something that grows. The more you experience trial and error, the more confident you become that eventually there is a solution. And you're not dissuaded by the failures. For example, Thomas Edison. You know, Thomas Edison wanted to figure out the electric light bulb. You know, it was candles before that, and fire, and lighting gas lamps that burned houses down. And then the whole electricity thing was invented, but how do we make a light? You know, and he tried filament after filament, but they always burned out. And he tried thousands and thousands and thousands of things before he figured it out. But you know what his attitude was? With every failure, he said, well, there's just one more thing. I don't have to try again. I'm closer and closer to the solution because I'm eliminating all the things that don't work. Boy, if you can give your client that kind of attitude, there'll be no stopping that person. So in this session, what we've really talked about is how to be a coach with a semi-directive kind of style. And the way to do it is to engage your client in trial and error. Get them to try things. In other words, you're not dictating what's going to work or what's not going to work. You're asking them to figure out some options and then giving them permission to try and fail and then try something new. By the way, that's not a bad gift to give anyone that you meet. Well, okay, until next time.